This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started with everything. Basically how I think I would like today's meeting to kind of run through and everything like that. I appreciate all of the back-end work that Christina and Gabrielle did. So I want to give both of them an opportunity to talk through that with everyone today. But first, I want to kind of address my email about why I would suggest that we kind of take a harder look about working off of University Council's draft just as the baseline. And obviously, most of it is going to be in line with the generalized structure of like the layout of the document, kind of like ultimately our end goal is to produce a document that is in the structure, like format of what University Council gave us. The reason I'm proposing us using that document to be just kind of like our baseline working off of is because it is more detailed, and because by using that document and by using the most detailed version of that document, we can kind of, it's easier to pull something apart, in my opinion, rather than create something new. And so that would be the process that we would be doing. We'd be pulling things apart of that to put them more in line with kind of what we liked from the OJA's version. And also because really, I haven't been given a formalized answer on the extension. However, it seems that in conversation with everyone, we are highly, highly encouraged to, you know, work as if we were going to produce a document that would be utilized in the next academic year, or basically produce the document that we are always expected to produce, you know, in public comment is very much like still in the air of how we do public comment. But we were just highly encouraged to continue, you know, working as if everything was normal. That's a big, highly encouraged thing. But just because, you know, we can go ahead and we can, you know, ask for a yes, no on the extension. Like if we want that, like I would ask for a formalized vote of the CJC today so I can bring it formalized vote to the UA leadership and to the UA itself. Just because last meeting, it kind of got lost in the fray since so much was turning over since our last meeting to now. But most of it was, I asked and people were like, keep working as if you're doing it. And I was like, okay, but can I get a definite? And I wasn't able to get a definite from everyone. So that's why I would like a formalized vote, because it would give me a little bit more of an ability to send our wishes. But I would love to hear people's thoughts. But before we go into that, just kind of the logistics of how to best get things going on. There is on the side, if you open the participants chat, like a way to click yes or no or something like that. Just easier for voting and also easier for telling me who wants to speak. So if you want to speak, just go ahead and hit that yes button, and then we can go along that speakers list if everyone can find that.
You want us to use raise hand or yes?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Use the raise hand
to speak, and then you can poll with a yes and no.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Gina. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll go for it. Risa. You're good.
Okay, yeah. I think that on a couple things. One is the timeline. The other one is the, you know, what we're going to work from. First, on the timeline, seems to me that it would be a good idea for us as a group to say, here's what we agree upon that's a reasonable approach to this. You know, the fact is everything is different. It doesn't mean we're not working. It just means that everything's different. I mean, I have to teach online. I don't want to teach online. I don't believe in online education, but I'm going to do it because that's the situation that we're in. Would we like to be done with this before next semester? I'm sure we would, but we can't do public comment in any meaningful way with everybody separated and engaged in, you know, all kinds of stressful activities. So that's the situation we're in. So it seems to me that if we lay out a realistic schedule and timeline in terms of when we, how we will continue to work on it, when we anticipate being able to do meaningful public comment, you know, and we're also, we don't know, because we don't know what will happen, but we can at least, you know, have a an anticipation of when we would be able to realistically do meaningful public comment, that we lay that out. We're not just saying, oh, we want an extension. What we're saying is, under the circumstances, here is what our committee believes is a feasible timeline that will enable us to complete our work, including public comment, and to note what we've already done in terms of the substantive provisions. So I think that's number one. Number two on the substance, maybe it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. It seems to me that there are provisions based on what we agreed upon in terms of approach that will be new. And if we go to the general counsel's proposal and say, well, let's exclude all these things and put in these new things, you know, again, it's six of one, half dozen of the other. Ultimately, we'll come out with, as you did with the substance, Joe, a clean copy that shows this is what we want to do. A lot of it will be new. Some of it may be things we think are acceptable and positive from the general counsel's proposal. So whether we call it working from the general counsel's proposal or we call it just having something new, it's going to be a mix of things, and ultimately we'll have a clean copy that is its own, has its own integrity and its own form. So that's those are my thoughts.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Just raise your hand in the chat.
Joe, this is Bob Howarth. I can't raise my hand because I'm on a telephone.
That's okay. Yep, go for it, Bob.
I just, I understand the extreme difficulty of working remotely, and I also firmly believe that we need to get some sort of community engagement, but I would ask that the CJC not take that aspect upon yourself, but rather do the best you can to get it to us at the university assembly as soon as you possibly can. In terms of asking for an extension, keep in mind it really is not Martha Pollack who would be asked for an extension. It would be the trustees. And the trustees, I don't know how they'll respond to yet one more postponement, but they thought they were going to have this from the University Assembly more than a year ago. I'm not sure that, you know, Martha Pollack so far has talks them into holding off on pushing us harder than she has, which is pretty hard, by the way. I hear from the trustees. I can't guess as to whether or not they would give an extension, but I wouldn't count on it. And I would urge you instead to do the best you can to move it on this spring as quickly as you can. Keep in mind that if they were to agree to a further extension until the fall, you're going to have a brand new committee on the CJC. Very, very little carryover from who's on it now. It's going to be almost like starting fresh again. And they're going to look at it that way. I'm going to look at it that way from the University Assembly standpoint. So I argue strongly that if you can get us a draft in the next, few weeks, certainly by the end of April, the outside, that would be the goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Risa.
Yeah, just to respond to that, I don't actually think, based on our discussions and, you know, the excellent work that has already been done, you know, by Gabrielle and Christina on this, the work so far, and the fact that we've been working on those general counsel procedures, I don't actually think we're actually in a conflict with what Bob is saying. You know, I think we have the ability to put together a draft for the procedures this semester. And, within the next month, it seems to me is doable. I don't think we're asking for an extension. I don't think there is an extension involved here. I think what we're talking about is completing our draft in the next month, just as Bob said. What I'd like to know is where the public comment would normally come in this process. Would it be that we would normally have public comment prior to it going to the UA, or would it normally be that the UA would get it and then it would go out to public comment? I'm really genuinely asking for information on this because I don't know the answer.
I'm trying to think because it just seems so, like, I don't know, so I'm going to kick it to Gina because I think Gina might know best, just because the Office of Assemblies has supported a public comment before. Gina?
Thanks. And all I can go by are sort of what has happened before. I think, you know, having Barbara probably is a great resource at this particular time. But procedurally, as I understand it, all of the recommendations for changes come from the CJC, which would incorporate all of the public comment before the final draft is put to the UA to finally vote on. That's my understanding of the process.
Okay. Thank you, Gina. Mm-hmm. That actually gives me a perfect segue to I see Gabrielle, your hand, but I'm going to go to Barbara real quick to introduce her to the committee and also ask her the same question. Barbara, thank you so much. Barbara will be serving as the interim JA during this period. She previously served as a JA at Cornell, and so she brings us a whole amount of information that would be really helpful for us during this whole endeavor. So Barbara, if you could feel free to introduce yourself and also kind of give perspective of what it's previously been like and when you've seen code revisions and code overhauls.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for the introduction and the opportunity to say hello to everybody. I've been on board for exactly 5 days, and so I'm finishing up my first week meeting the team in the Office of the Judicial Administrator remotely, trying to get set up with technology even as I try to use it. So bear with me for a little bit. I actually don't think it's helpful. I don't feel informed enough about kind of where we are in the process to make a comment on what the process ought to be in terms of when public comment should happen and when it shouldn't. I'm happy to review it and get up to speed and offer some thoughts, but honestly, I have not had an opportunity to plug back in this week and think hard about kind of things in that level of detail. I am really honored to have been asked to come back and serve Cornell in this role. I think it's an important time for the campus and certainly for the Office of the Judicial Administrator as we think about these significant changes. And I'm happy to you know, be part of that conversation. Other than that, I would just want to say, you know, I do have considerable experience here at Cornell, but it's also been a while since I was on this campus. So I'm mindful of that as well. I know how hard the work is that this committee does and that the UA does. And it's good to be back. And I look forward to doing this work together.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Gabrielle.
Yeah, so I just wanted to kind of echo what Risa said about figuring out the timeline. I think that there is a way that we can, you know, get this to the University Assembly by April, but I don't know that they should, you know, do this formal vote on it without any public comment. But if the priority is to get it to the University Assembly to consider, then I definitely think that's possible, but it does seem like, you know, maybe it's a discussion with University Assembly then to say, look, we need a more meaningful comment process if that's the balance that we're trying to achieve. I also wanted to just address quickly, you know, working off of council's draft rather than starting fresh. So, you know, looking at it, the first 2 to 15 pages are just completely contrary to the draft proposed by the OJA. And so I think by starting, by using that, I mean, we're essentially going to have to delete 15 pages anyways. So to me, it just seems like we can easily, you know, copy and paste parts that are applicable, and, you know, tweak them, which is, you know, somewhat of what I did in the draft. There are portions that are essentially copied and pasted from council's draft because they fit well. So I just do think that it would be a mistake to try to work off of their draft because it just is so inconsistent, those first like 15 pages.
Okay. Thank you. Gina.
Sorry. And I just wanted to follow up on the process part. All of the processes can be changed. And I think we're under, these are unusual circumstances. So I think as this body and the UA decide how they want to proceed, our office stands certainly ready to help if you want to need to help drafting a resolution or getting things in front of the folks that can approve things, or even coming up with different processes to make sure that this moves as quickly as necessary. So I'm just, what stands now is the process as I understand it to be, but every process can be changed. So.
Okay, thank you. Risa.
And of course, if there are other people who want to jump in, I'm happy to defer to that. But, you know, it sounds to me like the UA and everybody else who's looking at what we're doing would be very happy to see our full draft of the substantive provisions and the procedural material when we're done with it. I would have, no problem with sending it to the UA, making it clear that this is a draft that needs public comment. UA can read it and discuss it, you know, and perhaps we can together talk about what is the most effective way to do public comment. But I would put up a big, big warning sign, which I'm sure everybody is aware of, that to adopt a new code and procedures, you know, the substance and the procedures, without a genuine public comment period of people being able to engage with each other would be such a mistake. It would take all the hard work that we're doing and all our concern with having fair processes, you know, within a notion of due process, and basically undermining ourselves. You know, I mean, it would just be such a shame to do that, with particularly at a time of crisis. I've been here long enough to have seen those things happen, not, you know, within a pandemic, but to see things rushed through without sufficient public engagement. And it never works right. It creates so much work and so much unhappiness, and it undermines our ability to take our good work and have people make it better and engage with us. So, as I said, fine with me to give it to the UA when we have a full draft from our committee with a very strong statement that what is now needed is public comment. And to have public comment, not with a bunch of people across the globe who are stressed and can't talk to each other as organizations and collectively and engage with each other, but real public comment at the very beginning of when we come back, that we're not starting from scratch. We have a draft. It's been approved by our committee for public comment. The UA can have looked at it and done whatever they, you know, want to put in terms of comment, and then genuinely have a public comment period so everybody can be educated and participate about it. I can't imagine somebody, whether it's a trustees or the administration or the UA, opposing that. It would shock me.
All right. Anyone else want to add anything into the discussion? Because so far, it seems like keep the pace we're going, modify the timeline where we produce the documents at the end of the semester and find ways to find meaningful public comment in the future in conjunction with the UA. That's kind of how I'm pulling it apart. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but anyone else want to add anything to this conversation?
Joe, this is Bob. Can I just chime in again for a minute?
Yep, go for it, Bob.
Reese, I hear you 100% about wanting to get community buy-in, and I also want to make sure that the University Assembly does nothing without community buy-in, but I'm not convinced that we can't do it remotely. I don't think it has to wait for the fall, and I also worry I worry about several things if we postpone to the fall. One is that, again, most of you who are currently on the CJC will not be on the CJC in the fall, so it'll be a new group trying to explain and discuss it. There'll be a lot of turnover in the University Assembly as well. I won't be chair. It'll be a new leadership team. I'm not at all convinced that the trustees will let us go that long, given that this has been a three-year process now almost, and that they really were promised that it would be done a year ago, firmly, by the previous leadership of the CJC and the UA, our predecessors. I have no idea what they'll do, but I wouldn't count on them just saying, oh, yes, of course, it's unusual circumstances, so let's put it off. And in that sense, we'd lose any chance for any input from the CJC or the UA or for the community. As to whether or not we can get a meaningful discussion remotely, I believe we can, but it'll take some time. And so the faster the University Assembly is able to act, the better. That's why I'm hoping you can get us something sooner rather than later. In terms of real interaction, you know, I'm teaching a class of 265 students at the moment. Obviously, I don't like going online either, but like you, we have to do it, and we are doing it. We have already instituted chats with those 265 students, and we've gotten meaningful engagement in with 100 of them. It's more than 33% meaningful input. So I'm not convinced that to the fall is either necessary or even desirable. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Anything else on this topic? Risa?
Hi, Bryce. Just to follow in on that. follow up on that. It seems to me that based on what Bob's saying, if there's a possibility of opening public comment early and setting up possibilities of things being done remotely and seeing how it goes. Well, you know, I don't see any harm in that, right? But I think that we have to at least be cognizant of the fact that there may be some very real concerns expressed about of organizations not being able to really get together. But I think as a good faith gesture, when we have our drafts and the UA gets to look at it, then we can open things up and set up online forums and see how it goes. I mean, I think Bob's right about that. We can launch into that and then create some continuity for when we say, okay, well, now that we've gotten this public comment, and it needs to be long enough, right? I mean, it needs to be long enough for people to actually pay attention to this as opposed to paying attention to you know, dealing with illness and stress and working and all of those things, that we have that continuity. So that would be fine with me. I just wouldn't want to say, okay, well, we know that will work to have it done remotely. That, in fact, what we're trying to do is to see how does it work and to try to do that in good faith. I also think, based on what Bob said, that it would be realistic for us to set a date by which we plan, you know, kind of an on or about date to get it to the UA so that UA can actually have some time to talk about what we get to them before they disband for the semester. And of course, the semester has been extended. So perhaps we could talk about what that date would be.
Yeah, we can do that. Bryce had his hand up, so I'll let him talk, and then we'll go into the date conversation.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yep.
To echo what Risa said, I think we can proceed, but I wonder if realistically the UA can commit to holding a town hall meeting or something that will bring the kind of inclusive public discussion that needs to be had on this, or are they putting out so many other fires that, that's just not realistic? Because I think that's what, for me, the deciding factor as far as whether we push to the fall or whether we, the public discussion to the fall. I mean, I think we can still finish now, but, it seems like what I would like to know is from the people on, I'm a new member of the University Assembly, so I don't know what's going on there, and I won't start until the fall. But, right now, can they realistically do something to ensure that that public discussion actually happens?
From all of my conversations with the UA leadership and Bob and Jeff also being on the call, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the leadership team has the time and the ability to kind of dedicate to this, as this has been kind of the main goal for, the CJC and the UA leadership team as well. So I think definitely us working in conjunction with the leadership team, we could really get something going. I see Jeff has his hand up, so Jeff, go for it.
Yeah, so I very much agree with that sentiment and the idea that this specific aspect really does require a really critical public comment. This is something that I had previously worked on with the tobacco survey through the UA, and understanding the feedback that came from that and the experiences from the process is that input is really needed. I think Bryce, you bring up a really good point about the format of that comment, whether it's purely text-based or does it involve virtual interaction more in a video-based or town hall format. I'd love to get more opinions on that because I think that'll help us structure the timeline also from our end, how we would want to do that. Obviously, this is under the condition that it's all within a very tight schedule, but echoing what Bob said, we'd love to see it. I think that we can get it done through the CJC, and then the earlier that happens, then we can really formalize and solidify the public comment portion in anticipation for sending off, getting it revised, and then bringing it to the board.
Thank you for that, Jeff. Okay. Anything else on this before we go into a specific date we want to be done by? Risa, go for it.
Can somebody give information about when the board will be meeting the next couple of times? I generally know this, but I never remember exactly.
The next board meeting will be in May. I don't know what dates in May, but scheduled for typically when graduation weekend is held. Right. So they might be adjusting that, and that will probably also be on Zoom. So I would say mid to late May.
And when's the next one after that?
It would be October.
October. Okay. So it seems to me that in terms of the when something like this would get to the president and then the board, that if we build in the idea of the public comment being something that's long enough, that we're looking at October. Is that sort of feasible?
I guess that would be a question for how Bob feels about that, just as the UA chair.
Hi, Joe. Bob here. I lost the connection a bit. I'm driving along in my car. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
The board would like it in May. They've expressed to me that they expect to get it in May. I don't know how they'll react if we don't get it to them in May. Obviously, they have a lot of other things on their mind, but I would not count on them favorably taking something from us in October at this point in time. If we can get it to them in May, far better.
Risa.
Well, if that's the case, I don't know. I'm just sort of flummoxed by, this push. I mean, we've done so much good work and continuing to say, oh, they wanted it last year. I mean, I don't see anything that's been harmed by, you know, having this extra time that we've had to do some really good work. But if in fact they don't get it by May, what are they going to do? Write their own? They're going to impose the general counsel's work on us? I mean, I'm just a little confused about that. But just to finish.
To be precise, what they told me is that if the university assembly can't get its act together, their words, then yes, they will probably ask the general counsel to take it over, and they will probably change the charter of the university assembly, taking that power away from us. Whether or not they do that in May, I don't know, but they may.
Well, I think there's negotiations.
I'd rather not find out.
Yeah, there's negotiations to be had, but then going back to this question of if we actually worked with that notion of giving it to them in May, well then, how would we do public comment is a very big question.
Gina sent me the last major code revisions that they were done online the fall 2007. Basically, so far she's found just online comments, and she's looking into see if how many, if at all, public forums were even scheduled for that period. So I think we could use that as like kind of a marker to see what happens there. And if it is, you know, just the online comments, we can figure out through there. Jen?
Hi guys, I hope you can hear me. This might be wildly unpopular, and I don't mean to be this person, but I've been on this committee just for this year, and it feels like we owe it to ourselves to do what we're being asked to do, and the timeline is crappy, and my work is crappy from home, and everybody's work from home is crappy, and we're in a really difficult situation, and I understand that. But I don't want to be on a committee that doesn't fulfill what we've been asked to do. It feels like, and I've said to Joe and I've said to Gina, I've thought about stepping off of the committee because we make small progress, but then we spend all this time talking about the progress that we're supposed to make, and it's frustrating, and I think it's really hard, and I imagine the UA is frustrated, and I wasn't on the committee last year, and I know a bunch of us are new. But I think we should aim to keep moving things forward and getting to the point where we can turn in something that we're proud of. And if the public comment piece isn't successful electronically, then we petition to say, we don't feel like there was enough engagement with it. We don't feel like enough people reviewed it. And maybe we move it that way. I'm just trying to think of a way that we can come to some sort of an answer right now about, like, let's just move forward so we can get into the work, because it's 9:40 and I know I have a 10:30 meeting, and I'm sure other people do, but I want to give my best to this too. I just sometimes feel like we talk ourselves in circles, and I have struggled with whether or not it's the right spot for me, because I don't know if we're moving forward at the pace that we've been asked to do, and I don't like feeling like we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. That's just my point. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Gabrielle, and then we'll close out on this. If that's okay with everyone, go for it, Gabrielle.
If I could just make a suggestion. So I am kind of fearful, I guess, of the overhanging kind of suggestion that, you know, council's draft might just replace this one, and that I'm really not okay with that. So my suggestion would be that we can aim to have a completed draft as a committee by April 17th, and open comments April 20th through 24th. Some suggestions that I have, and I'm, you know, very open to doing this. I have a lot more time than I have ever had, but I'm happy to reach out to organizations and just talk to them about the revisions and, you know, schedule those meetings. That's something that the JCC, in 2013, she was very active about reaching out to organizations. I'm happy to do that to kind of engage the community more. And so I think if we do the public comments from, you know, either that weekend, the 18th through the 24th, or, you know, something within that, and then we can, you know, maybe have a week to a week or 2 weeks to kind of regroup and then send it to the UA, because, you know, I agree. I just want to make sure that all our hard work is actually preserved. So that would be my suggestion. I think we can get creative about the organizations we reach out to and scheduling mini meetings as well as like larger meetings with the UA's help.
So I don't know how Gabrielle decided to pick the same dates that I already had written down, because those were that was kind of the same dates that I was going to suggest as well for everyone, on this procedure section at least, because I do think like that is very reasonable and we can get something out by then, and that provides us still a period of time where we still have working periods during and after that public comment period. So that would definitely be the timeline that I would endorse. In addition, I think since we have the substantive violation section done, and in my email, I was going to send that out to the UA today anyhow, just to get like kind of a look around for people to see it. I think there's no harm at this point in kind of allowing there to be online comments on that, just because I think, you know, if we're done with that, let's have that going in the background while we're doing work on the procedures, and then we can regroup with that when we regroup with the procedures, public comment and everything like that. I think that's really fair for us to do, just to have something going on in the background so we just don't have one document laying there. So that would kind of be my thought process. Yep, go for it, Jeff.
Yeah, so like you don't, like from our perspective, you don't necessarily have to bring everything just as is in a giant piece, right? If you feel like something needs additional time for comments and you feel like it's in the place to be distributed widely, you can do that as early as possible if you feel comfortable as a committee, and then we can distribute that and give it the time it needs with the general public. So feel free to think about different approaches, and whether it's one giant batch or one small one, but I would recommend the latter just because it'd be easier on all of us.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask for the committee to kind of formally vote to accept April 17th as our procedure deadline, and also putting the substantive code violations part up for public comment. If could I see Jen already going with a yes, so if people could just do the checkbox to kind of endorse that plan, and we can move on with the rest of the meeting. There's like a green yes, yeah. That's not nice. And if you are on your phone or don't have the access to the laptop, feel free just to say it.
This is Gavin, yes.
Laura, yes.
Andrea, yes.
This is Uche, yes.
Eight to zero to one, we're sticking with the April 17th for the procedure deadline for everyone. Oh, nine, Kat just said yes. And nine to zero to one, and we'll put the substantive part up for public comment. I'll work with the OA on that to get that up there. And we can move on with the rest of the meeting. So I'm going to kick it to Christina to discuss the document that she sent out to the committee, just to give like a little walkthrough with that so people understand where that's coming from and how we can kind of use that as a document in the procedure section moving forward. What would be the best how to utilize that document? So Christina.
Hi everyone. Thanks Joe. So from our last meeting, I had suggested putting together a document that would outline basically what the JA's office currently does in terms of what happens when we meet with a student one-on-one to discuss the allegations brought against them, giving the student an opportunity to share their perspective, as well as if we get to the point of proposing a summary decision agreement. So what I have outlined in this document talks about who the participants would be.
Ooh, if you want to share your screen as you go through the document, because I think that would help some people go through.
Okay, so I clicked the share screen. Host disabled attendees sharing screen.
I did? Oh my god.
Let me see. So if you don't mind sharing, Joe, that would be great.
Yeah, let me pull that up.
Let Right. Thank you. So my face also went away in the process of the sharing of the screen. So I'm trying to start that up and it says that I'm unable to. So pardon the technical difficulties, but I will try my best to see if there's any reactions that maybe prompt a little bit more clarification. So the educational conference, as we all recall in the draft that we talked about of the procedures last meeting, would basically be occurring when and if the JA's office believed that there was a formal investigation that needed to occur. And so this very closely mirrors our current summary decision agreement process. And Gabrielle, please jump in as you see appropriate, but you're probably the one who's heard me talk about this in many of our meetings. So the participants are generally typically one representative from the student conduct office. The footnote that I kind of put in there is sometimes we'll have new folks join our office who may participate with the permission of the respondent for training purposes. The respondent will generally be there, of course, the respondent's advisor and support person if applicable. We schedule our meetings for 60 minutes, and the agenda is kind of outlined there. We talk about introductions, build a little bit of rapport, help individuals perhaps relieve any potential angst or confusion up to that point. We review the student code of conduct resolution process, talk about the student's rights, explain the standard of proof, if the standard of proof is met, what the possible educational sanctions can be. We talk about the expectation of honesty, and then we provide a summary of the incident report our office received and talk about some of the allegations that are made. A respondent then is given an opportunity to share their perspective. They certainly do not have to. And sometimes I think when a student comes in to the meeting with a JCC, this is kind of the point where they might want to talk to a JCC in private. But obviously for an advisor or support person, they can speak with the respondent privately at any point during this conversation. We have a discussion about what happened, and particularly important is why this incident happened from my perspective. And we provide a copy of a redacted incident report so a student can also review that, discuss whether the standard of proof is met. If yes, then we also talk about proposed educational sanctions. And that's when, if there is an agreement, the agreement is drafted, shown to the student, and then signed if appropriate. So I'm kind of a person who's very visual. So this is kind of an outline of what happens right now in our meetings. But as you continue to scroll, thanks, Joe, you'll also kind of just see a sample script. This is not something I typed out for this committee, I'll admit. I was training some of our graduate assistants and wanting to give them a little bit more of what I actually say in a meeting to a student. So what the overall review of the process would look like. Again, this is something that Gabrielle's probably heard many times that I've shared with a student. So it kind of outlines a little bit more of the flow, when I would answer some questions a student may have, how we're talking about the standard of proof, how we're talking about educational sanctions. It's kind of all there. And so as you can see, because part of the code process can be a little bit daunting right now, and procedurally heavy, it's long. We're talking a little bit for a little bit in terms of logistics before we talk about the specific allegations. But I find that starting off this way, talking about some of the background pieces can really put a student at ease, because a lot of what a student hears about a JA's office will generally be hearsay. You know, they hear from an RA or they hear from maybe an upperclassman about, oh, well, if you get JA'd XYZ, or when you go to talk to the JA, ABC happens. So we kind of like to give the student an outline of what occurs when they walk in. So happy to answer any questions, of course, but I hope this provides a little bit of insight as to what we do in our 60-minute meetings with students pretty much every day, Monday to Friday, we're there, so.
Great, thank you. Any questions for Christina? If not, I'll ask Gabrielle to go ahead and share what the work that she did. Give her the time to discuss that. Gabrielle, you do have the ability to share screen now. We made sure that happened, so you can utilize that on your computer.
Okay.
Okay, great. Let me just pull up. And I also, I'm using two screens, so I'm not really sure how that works. Let me... Oh, great. Okay, so it's sharing my other screen, actually, I think. Okay, is it sharing? It should be, right?
Yep, we can see it.
Okay, awesome. So, yeah, so the conflicts of interest portion up here is, or is it just sharing? It is sharing a screen, right?
Yep.
Okay. This is not obviously with the administrative panel proceedings, but I wanted to use this as an example because I think that there were just things that I felt like were missing as I was writing this out. And so this would be an example of just other sections that would likely apply to any type of hearing. And so, you know, just kind of, and I followed counsel's kind of format, which also matches 6.4, even though, you know, obviously the content is different, just to keep that kind of consistent. So I took the outline that the JA provided for the administrative panel proceedings and then added in some of those things that Risa and I discussed with the group last time. So just to start, this is kind of the general information that was already in the outline itself. One thing, though, that would be different based on the suggestions that were talked about last time is that the administrative panel chair would not be the same person every time, nor would the panel itself be the same every time. So where there were kind of ambiguities that I noticed, I, you know, left a comment for everyone to consider. So I also included some timelines that were not in the original draft in here. So for example, that a hearing, an administrative panel hearing should occur within 20 business days, but that it can be postponed. This matches the current code for the hearings. And then moving to the pre-hearing procedure. So my attempt with the hearing, pre-hearing procedure and hearing procedure was really to balance the interests of both the respondents as well as the JA, because it does seem like the direction is to move into more of an educational process. And so that the JA can actually spend more time on that educational process and that these hearings aren't just a time suck. So what I tried to balance with that then was to break these pre-hearing submissions up into, so basically once notice is provided of the hearing itself, the panel chairs, there's responsibilities here about who will do what. And so this is similar to what the JA proposed about submitting basically a summary of the investment. Receiving that summary of the investigation. And then the respondent at that time can also submit requests that any witnesses other than the respondent be heard at the hearing, which the panel would decide on and grant. So again, that's kind of limiting the time that these hearings would go on for. They would produce a witness list, and so there would be some notice about who would actually be considered. During the hearing itself, there's some more things that we can discuss here, but generally, I pulled from the university assembly adopted procedures for the current hearing boards, and allowed for questioning by all parties. But again, this might only be one person that's being questioned. It could just be the respondent, so it might be very short. And then I also give the opportunity for accommodation statement. So this was kind of a point of what I would think is the JCC's compromising. But again, it's trying to consider the time that these hearings go on for. So I am not a huge fan of the impact mitigation statements, but I think that if we're trying to think about like how we can make these more efficient, that giving would be okay. And then allowing the JA to submit basically a written rationale that accompanies their proposed administrative resolution, which would have been included in the summary of the investigation. So, and then basically the panel is able to then deliberate as soon as the closing statements end, which again is far more efficient than what currently happens, because we kind of wait around for like an hour to an hour and a half for the panels to deliberate, and then they render a decision. And then we go back in for sanctions arguments if that happens. And so this really should limit that time. And so then here's just some guidance on the panel decision. I imagine that this will be similar for the other types of if hearings as well. And then in the JA's draft, so they suggested to not have an appeal after the administrative panel proceeding. So I kind of left that as a question for the group instead of including it. But I think that if there is an appeal at this stage, it would just be the same procedures as the larger hearings. The other document, I can move to that, or we can maybe just stick with this. I don't know, Joe, what you want.
Jen had a question about the impact and mitigation statements real quick. It's hard for me to do that. Yeah, go for it, Jen.
Hey, sorry, thanks. That feels very much policy 6.4 like. The impact mitigation statement is something that came out through that. Well, not 6.4, but you know, universally. Why are we bringing that to this process?
Yeah, so I mean, that's definitely a decision that the committee can consider. I guess the way that I was kind of envisioning this was, honestly, the hearings from my experience with the sanctions. So the way that it works right now is that there's like a bifurcated hearing. So there's the hearing on the merits, and then we move to sanctions if it applies.
Right.
A lot of the same arguments are kind of made over and over
sure.
and over. Right. And so I don't necessarily see the harm. I also noticed in 6.4, which this is just not something that's utilized right now, it said that there can be a recorded statement,
yeah.
which I think means, I mean, I guess I was reading it and seeing that for the first time, because we always use those forms online, but I could see us allowing the respondent to record themselves, explaining to the panel maybe the impact and things like that. I guess I just think that this cuts down on like maybe 2 to 3 hours, which I think is significant when we're considering the time. I have not seen a huge difference in the arguments that are made. And then I think that we can maybe eliminate that for these like larger, more significant hearings where suspension or dismissal is possible, to have this, the bifurcated hearing still, because their sanctions are very, mm-hmm. very significant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for clarification.
Yep. Alex, go for it.
First of all, I thank you very much for this great draft, Gabriel. I just have questions regarding the conflicts of interest that you drafted. So from what I understand, it says that the chair would have the sole discretion whether to remove a member of the panel or to recuse themselves. I just want to know whether there would be any process that could check and review the reason for that decision, so that the chair does not have any like kind of too much discretion on deciding this matter. I just wanted to ask you whether there could be any review or check process, so that he can explain why he has made that decision on this conflicts of interest process.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's a great suggestion. So this is essentially what is currently in policy 6.4. There's really very little discussed about this currently in the campus code of conduct, because it's the only place that it really appears right now is in the university assembly adopted mm-hmm. UHB procedures for the hearings themselves. So this isn't a really robust protection as it is now. So, you know, I certainly would be open to changing the structure. This was just a suggestion based on kind of, I guess, adding a more robust protection than already exists. But if you know, we would want to change that even more. Like, I'm very happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Oh, Risa, go for it.
Thanks so much, Gabrielle. I think this is, you know, great, and it makes a lot of progress. You know, I think it's in really good shape as it is, with something for us to work on. The one thing I would wonder is whether it would make sense. I don't know if it would be right here when the administrative panels are introduced, or earlier in our draft, ultimately, when we get to it, is to have more kind of a narrative someplace along the lines of what we had discussed last time, to say, to explain to somebody reading it, kind of an introduction. Here's how the process is designed to work, to explain that it gets continually more formal, and to identify for a reader who hasn't been through all these discussions why this administrative panel is put in for potential sanctions that are less than suspension or dismissal, so that that really comes through as a, you know, as a the purpose, the goals of what we're doing. And I think that some clarity could also be brought in to crystallize what's in there, but to crystallize that, you know, the respondent and any, I guess, complainant who's not the university. I don't know what term to use, but whoever, you know, maybe bringing an individual kind of a complaint, they have the right to testify, but that other witnesses will be heard only upon permission granted by the panel. And that's in there. I know it's in there substantively, but something that really crystallizes that, I think, would make it clearer the difference between this hearing and a more formal one. But thank you very much for this.
All right. Anyone else before we move on to the other document? If not, okay. Gabrielle, if you want to kick it to the other one.
Sure. Okay, so here's the other one. I mean, this isn't that substantial, but the JA's draft allowed for the same, I guess, rights for the advisors and the support people. And so this is very similar to the language in the current code. And then I wrote a section for our office. I recognize that the name has been suggested to change several times now. We are not a fan of the proposed suggestions, but we leave that to the committee to decide. So this is just very similar to what's in there. I mean, I think that this is kind of on the back burner compared to the procedure section. It was just something that I had worked on, so I wanted to send it out.
Okay, well, Christina, yeah, go for it.
So, Gabrielle, I was wondering if you can share with the group a little bit more about why perhaps the JCC is not a fan of the name change. So I don't know that I ever shared with you or anybody in this group, but at the University at Buffalo, my alma mater, I actually was a JCC when I was a law student. And that office was actually called the Student Defenders. and they actually had a name change recently too. But just a little bit of context is, I think the fact that if we choose to move away from the word judicial, I think it has the potential to be confusing if there's only one office that retains the word judicial in their name, and how that might be a little confusing for students. I also recognize there's also student advocates, the student advocates office on campus, which I bring that up because advocate is actually, I think, the word that really rings true to kind of what you folks do for students. So that might be confusing to you student advocates, but I'm just wondering from your office's perspective, why wanting to hold on to JCC?
Yeah, so I think we're happy if we change to Cornell Defenders or something like that. So the student advocates is now taken. We're also hesitant to add the word student into our name because we advise faculty and staff for policy 6.4. And it is actually a significant portion of our 6.4 cases. So we wouldn't want to kind of, I don't know, I guess just, I don't think that's the impression that we would like to put out. We don't like, so, you know, the thought was, okay, maybe we can do, because there's the complainants advisors, maybe we could do respondents advisors, but then we're RA with other RA offices, right? So I thought that was confusing. We really don't like respondents codes counselors. It's just too much. It's just like too long. I don't know. I agree. It doesn't really fit. So we put out there Cornell Defenders as like a second option. Yeah.
Risa.
Thanks. I don't have any suggestions about the name. I'm sure that somebody's going to come up with something wonderful on that. But I do have a question that relates to terminology, which I'm really confused about in terms of the discussion we've had in the current general counsel's proposal, is what we mean when we say complainant. I know there's been discussion about from the JA's office that they want to get away from the notion that it's the JA's office bringing the complaint, even though it does look like it's the JA doing it. We have the complainant's, you know, counselor now. I don't understand what we mean by complainant, and maybe we just don't have agreement, but I'd love to hear from the people who are in practice now, you know, particularly Gabrielle and Christina, about what is the meaning of that term?
So I can start for us. So right now in the Campus Code of Conduct, a complainant is a particularly important distinction from, say, a witness or a victim, because a complainant actually has procedural rights under the Campus Code. So they have the right to appeal or basically express disagreement with a decision rendered either by a hearing board or even through a summary decision agreement process. And the distinction that we always kind of make as an office when we're explaining to a student the difference is a complainant is someone who has both been personally harmed by the potential misconduct by a respondent, as well as someone who is electing to serve as a complainant in the process. So they that means that, you know, a respondent has the right to confront this person at a hearing. The respondent has the right to hear kind of their perspective of what they're being accused of, kind of in exchange for the fact that they have the right to appeal a decision rendered by the hearing board. So that's the way I've kind of explained it to a student, and the way I interpret the difference between, say, a complainant, a witness, a victim, and of course a respondent.
And when is the university the complainant? Is the university always a complainant?
So if there's an individually identified person, then that person is the complainant. So a classic example would be if there's a physical altercation between two people and a respondent punches another person, then that other person would be a complainant because they're personally harmed. But I would say a vast majority of the referrals to the JA's office, there is no identified complainant in terms of an individual. So right now, as the Campus Code of Conduct is written, the JA's office ends up representing the complainant, which is the university community.
If I could maybe just kind of draw a comparison between 6.4 and this process. So the way that it would currently work now, even if there is a designated complainant in the definition that Christina is using, that person would be a witness that the JA calls at the hearing itself. They do have other rights in the current code. So if you know, if the initial complaint, I guess, is not pursued, there are additional rights that complainant has. But they do act more as a witness, whereas in 6.4, because of the way that it's structured, it really is a complainant, a respondent on the other side, and then the Title IX office is in the middle of that. So the structure is a bit different.
If I just follow up, I just think that that's something we really need to clarify when we're looking at how to write this, because it's kind of murky in general. So I would really think we should sharpen that, you know, that understanding of what that means and the role of whatever we call the JA's office, the role of the JA's office in relation to representing the university. It's unclear, you know, and I understand the philosophy that Michelle was talking about in terms of wanting to remove the JA's office from being viewed as kind of prosecutor. But I just think it's confusing, given that basically it's the university, I guess the JA's office, that has the burden of proof.
Yeah, that's always been, as I continue to read through what we define as a complainant, when I first read that RAs would be the individual complainants, I said, I don't want to do that in my whole entire life as an RA, because I can only imagine having a poor RA down there for like a full day going through the number of reports they might have done through a duty log, which would just be impossible for them to do. But I mean, I think that's definitely an area that we need to look at and actually clarify better to understand, you know, what, you know, there are definitely going to be opportunities in which we cannot force a student to become a complainant when, you know, they do feel like unsafe in situations. You know, I could see someone being like, I don't want to be the individual complainant against this whole organization in a hazing violation. I need someone else to take that on with me in a sense. So I think that was a cause for concern that I had when I first kind of read through what University Council wanted to define as a complainant in this whole process. But yes, thank you, Gabrielle, for all of your work on this. It was really fantastic and really helpful for everyone. I know that for sure, and just getting the ball moving on everything. So kind of where I want to go from here is what next chunks of work we need to get out to be put in line with the OJA version of what we're going for. And I want to pull that up, but if people have initial thoughts of where we need to start plugging in more detail, please let everyone know as I search for that on my computer here real quick.
Joe, can you remind me where we might be able to find a copy of it?
In the box. I'll actually ask Gabrielle where she feels that we might need to add more detail, just because she's been the first person looking at everything like that. So I guess from your perspective, where would you like to start seeing more detail, like the initial stuff that you need or that we should start working on?
Yeah, so I guess I'm confused. So are we comfortable kind of just redrafting portions, or because that, I guess that does kind of change how I would attack this.
I think the way that you said you did it, by kind of looking at what the current code has, what the University Council gave, and what the OJA is kind of, what the OJA proposed, and kind of meshing the three together, I think that's the only way we can kind of go about doing this in the best way. So I think your method of doing that was the best way, the best practice that we should continue doing.
Okay, yeah, then I guess, so I see some kind of big questions that I think everyone needs to address. One would be this question about complainant, and I see that applying throughout the entire procedure section. So that is something that just, you know, needs to be decided on. The next, you know, bigger question I think for everyone would be the appeal process and what that looks like between the administrative panel and the larger hearing boards. And then the third kind of larger thing for everyone to consider would be the standard of proof. Beyond that, though, where I see us needing to kind of like add in substance. So I guess transforming what Christina submitted into, like, I guess whatever format we're going to use. But I think that the agenda portion, like the outline of it, is pretty, you know, like that pretty much explains what happens. And I think that I've seen every case handler kind of handle it like slightly differently. And so I think giving them that discretion is perfectly fine as long as we check the boxes as to what that educational conference should include. I mean, the actual hearing procedures for the larger hearings need to be fleshed out, but I do think a lot of that is just going to be kind of merging what exists already, because that essentially is what the hearing boards are currently. And just, you know, redrafting it into this format, because currently we really do pull from the university, like from the campus code of conduct and the university assembly hearing board procedures. It really isn't just all in the campus code of conduct. Yeah, so I think that those are probably the next two big. And then I don't know if this, I really like the suggestion of adding like a narrative of what the goals are more broadly, but I don't know if that can happen now or if that should wait until we kind of see what the structure looks like when it's pulled together.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And especially on the adding the narrative part, kind of waiting to the end for that. So I think with those kind of three big questions and then two more procedural questions, I kind of want to assign that out to everyone on the committee to kind of take stabs at with each other together. Because I think that would be the best, especially just kind of seeing what people are interested in and also who are the people in practice. So I could only assume that Christina, Gabrielle, and Barbara, and anyone else who's really intensive on the practice, kind of working together on the larger hearing format, just because that's what y'all do. And you have the expertise. So I would say, like, if you all want to tackle that for next meeting, that would be a huge help. Because I think then we can start really pushing on that, as well as the educational conversation aspect and kind of how to put that into the code and everything, like, or the procedure section. That would be super helpful. And then we have the complainant, the appeal process, and standard of proof that people can pick from to work together on. So Risa, kind of what I hear, I mean, you could do all of them, but it seems like the complainant is the most interesting part for you. If you want to kind of take the lead on that section.
In terms of defining the complainant, is that
what you're... defining the complainant and kind of writing that section through.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Let me just mention, I looked at what Michelle had given to us, and yep, her schematic actually interestingly says the university is the only complainant, which actually makes a lot of sense to me. I'm also happy to volunteer to work on the formal hearing part. I've already done various, you know, edits on Google, the Google Doc, on lots of stuff. I hope that's useful, you know, mm-hmm, not only because I put a lot of time into it, but I also think that, you know, I hope it's useful to people generally. So I'm happy to work on the formal hearing part as well.
Okay, perfect. Then I'll put you in with Gabrielle, Christina, and Barbara on that.
Are you guys going to be working on all aspects of hearings, the administrative panel and the formal hearing? I just wasn't clear on that. Or is that what they're going to be working on?
I think so. If you want to add more stuff with the administrative panel, but Gabrielle, I think, was focusing more on like the review board, like the big one on suspensions.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to work on that as well.
Then I'll put you down for complainant. And then I'm happy to take kind of the standard of proof conversation, just because I think, you know, giving both sides to that whole entire thing and just allowing this committee to make that recommendation, I'm happy to take the lead on that with whoever wants to join me, just as giving it a full thing. And then I need someone just to take the lead on appeal process.
I can do the appeals, but one thing that I forgot about, so there is at the very end of the JA's proposal, kind of the discussion about how the panels are formed. Mm-hmm. This would be different given the changes to have a rotating panel for the administrative panel. So I do think there's kind of an outstanding question about whether the administrative panel members will be pulled from the same group as the university hearing boards. And then also fleshing out what those procedures are like for selecting those members.
Mm-hmm. I can take kind of that part of it just because I've witnessed kind of the back end logistics of how we've done selections for years now and kind of how we've done the pools and everything like that. So I'm happy to take that section around. Okay. And then I don't want to throw everything on you, Gabrielle, for the appeals, for everything.
I love this. I'm very fine.
So if no one else wants to kind of write up what the appeals Christina.
I can help. I okay. think it makes sense if we're working together on the administrative hearing and hearing all that stuff. So
yeah. Okay. Wonderful. So then we'll put y'all with that. Risa?
You may have made this clear, but I missed it. On the work that Christina already did, is one of the next stages to take that, which I really found it useful, you know, that description, and to make it more concise with regard to actually procedural language to put into this. Is that something that Christina is going to be working on?
Yeah, yes, for sure. And that, yep. Barbara?
Thanks. I just have a question about that. Are we... I think the description of the educational conference that Christina pulled together is really helpful as an educational tool and as a guide for people in the office. That strikes me as way more detail than would be appropriate to include in a code. So I'm just a little uncertain. Maybe I'm hesitant to jump in because I feel like I'm in the middle of a conversation that you all have been having for months. But I would hope that we wouldn't try to put that level of detail of language about a conversation that any person would be having in a meeting in a code.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do, because I think ultimately we and kind of the university as a whole, like, really want to focus this on the educational aspect, and we really want to place more emphasis onto having that be an avenue for people. And I think in the initial procedures that we received, it just didn't feel like we gave the same weight to that option as we gave, like, the panels and stuff like that. Like, we just said, you may use alternative dispute resolution in this process. And everyone's like, okay, what does that look like? What does that mean for a student? So can we add more detail into that section? I think that would be helpful for people looking at these procedures to say, okay, we're going to give the same kind of credence and weight to this process as we are the panel process, just to make sure that students do feel comfortable walking into like an alternative dispute resolution setting when they're like, oh, okay, I know what to expect. I know what to happen. Because I think right now we're kind of at a point where there are students who would be like, I don't want to do this process because I don't know what this process entails. And I don't know if there would be a necessarily opt out of this if we went into it.
Okay. I understand. I think where we're trying to get, maybe there's a different mm-hmm. way to do it than including a script for a conversation.
Oh yeah, for sure. That, yeah. Risa.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the idea is to create something that's concise, but clear. And that's what I understand Christina's doing at the next stage. I also wanted to raise, I think we need some significant work not to say lengthy, but significant, on what the investigative process is. We've had some discussion of that kind of investigator model that the General Counsel's Office put forth, which is replicating 6.4. So when I was going through the code draft that General Counsel proposed, I was just basically slashing a lot of that in terms of shifting to the investigation report being something that was, you know, almost like a hearing, and moving more towards a hearing at the different stages that we talked about. So I would find it useful, particularly like because Gabrielle and Christina have been involved early in these stages, and I'd be happy to work with them as well, to make sure that whatever we put in there describing what the investigation consists of and its use or lack of use in a hearing would be, because that's something that's really different in the proposed General Counsel's version.
Yep, for sure on that. I think that makes a lot of sense, just because since it is such a departure from what we're doing, you know, making it very clear and consistent as to what that would be as a process, and how that would interplay with the panels, just because we want to be able to, Christina, yeah, I saw your hand go up real quick.
I appreciate what you're bringing up, Risa. I think my only hesitant part about that is investigations can look really different, right? I mean, when you're investigating a public urination case, which is a very complex hazing case, it looks vastly different in terms of depth, in terms of just how long it takes and all that. So I think, kind of similar to what Barb was talking about with the educational conference, kind of a summary, a very brief of what, you know, what you're looking for, what is the purpose of an investigation, is probably sufficient, because I can also appreciate that different conduct officers, different folks investigate differently. There isn't this, you know, overarching best practice on how you approach an investigation. There are a lot of factors to that. So just something to consider.
Can I just follow up real quickly? I'm in total agreement. I mean, I think that what's in that proposal from the General Counsel is really turning the investigation into a hearing and setting it forth in that way. And I think we should move away from that and provide enough information to people as to what do we mean by an investigation without making the investigation the central part of a decision-making process. So I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah, so if Risa and Christina and whoever might else have like investigative like background, I don't know, Jen, have you done investigations with the university in your role so far?
Yeah, I've done hazing. I've done a lot for hazing, and I've done a couple 6.4s.
Okay. Would you be willing to work with Christina and Risa on what the investigative process might look like, just to
absolutely do that?
Thank sure. you so much.
You bet.
Barbara?
Yeah, and I just want to chime in. I'm not volunteering at this point to do any specific thing, but obviously wherever Christina is plugged in, we'll work together. And I do see it as my job stepping into this, although I don't feel qualified to jump into the conversation fully today. Obviously, I'm happy to be involved in these conversations and help move this along. So I don't want people to think my lack of assignments is a lack of involvement.
No worries. Totally understand. Being cognizant of time, it is 10:29. And we've kind of assigned out all the big topics to everyone. As big topics, as you continue reading through this stuff, and if stuff comes up where you're like, oh, I wish someone would start exploring this idea, just send it to the listserv and hopefully someone can volunteer if you do feel overwhelmed in this process, just because I don't want people to be like totally swamped with work just because it is a crazy time. But yeah, so if we can do all the parts that we were assigned for next week, or if you need like, hey, I won't get this part to you this week, I want this discussed next week, just let me know so we can structure the agenda next time. But we'll essentially run it through the same way. Risa?
I have a request, and if it's not possible for next week, fine, that Is there any way we can do the meeting at 10 a.m. next week and not 9?
I'm okay with that as long as everyone else is okay, as long as we continue to have quorum, like a critical mass of people. I'm okay with moving it down an hour.
And for me, it would only be for next week. I have a conflict that cannot be changed. And so it's a request, and I understand if people can't do that.
Okay. If people just want to give me like a thumbs up in the chat or like a yes in the chat, if that's okay, that would be wonderful. Yep. It's looking good from everyone. So next week, our meeting will be at 10 and not 9. So we will do that. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for today, getting the logistical conversation out of the way and everything like that. I appreciate it. Thank you so much to Gabrielle and Christina for the back end work that you did for this meeting. So I will see you all next week. Yes.
Really quick. Next week is technically spring break. Are you guys still going to meet?
I'm okay with meeting. I'll ask the other undergraduates as long as the staff are okay and the faculty are okay, just because, yeah, I feel like I've had a spring break now for 2 weeks or something like that.
Okay. So. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware.
Spring break? Never heard of it.
Nope. Okay. So perfect.
Can you clarify next week's meeting will be from 10 to 11:30?
10 to 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. Yep.
Our office will send out a revised calendar invite just to make sure that you all have it.
Thanks, right. Gina.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I will talk to you all next week. Bye.
Stay healthy.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.